I'm Becky, and you're listening to Reverse Cyclopedia. Typically, encyclopedias are big books of knowledge, but this is the opposite of that. Together with Jed,
hello,
we'll create a space where it's okay to be dumb, at least temporarily. If you want to get smarter, keep walking, sweetheart! Otherwise, let's find out what we don't know.
Things that you think that you thought you should know, well, it turns out you don't, and that's how it goes. So sit back, shut up, and enjoy the show. It's Reverse Cyclopedia.
Yeah.
Reverse Cyclopedia. How many A's are in that?
At least 12.
Oh, yeah, good number. If we were guessing, you know, how many A's in the jar, like there are marbles or your gumballs or something, that's a pretty solid guess, I think.
Thank you. Yeah. I hated those as a kid.
I was atrociously bad at those. I don't know why.
I just was dumb.
I think I was always just like lazy at counting, where it was just like, 40. There's 40 in the jar. It's like a gallon. And they counted that later, and they were like 690. And I was like, oh, so I was a little off. I felt like really ashamed. Like, I wish I could just go and erase or just like rip out the page that you write down and just eat it. So
like,
the other kids in the class
or
like the fundraiser at school or whatever didn't see how stupid my guess was.
Sure. Yeah.
I think it coincides.
They would have been like, excuse me, Jed, why are you eating that piece of paper?
Don't worry about it.
I just like paper. I just want to eat paper.
For my integrity.
It's good for fiber. I just need more fiber in my diet.
A 7-year-old need more fiber.
Yeah.
Keeps us regular.
Yeah.
Gotta start while we're young.
Yeah. That's good habits.
I have a sneaking suspicion that it coincides. I would love to do a research study on this. It coincides with my time management as an adult. So like I always am underestimating things.
Yes, you are.
So it goes back to marbles and gumballs in a jar or whatever.
Okay, but do you think that's the gumballs in the jar's fault, or do you think you just never evolved past being bored of counting?
I wasn't blaming them. No, the blame is with myself. Okay, way to pile on. Yeah, I know. I'm calling myself out. Yeah.
Well, I'm curious to know what the jars, the marbles in the jars have to do with your I don't see the correlation, I guess.
I'm just saying I've underestimated things my entire life. It's genetic.
Okay.
Whichever chromosome it exists on, there it is. Making me feel bad about myself here.
I was just trying
to own up to my faults and everything. And it's like
it just sounded like you were blaming that experience as a child. You know how it is. It's like, oh, why do you do this? Well, because of childhood trauma or because of this experience I had as a kid or whatever. And like, oh, there it is. And it sounded like you were like, oh, I'm bad at time because I was never good at the marble thing. And I was like, I don't think that works.
No, what I would equate what you just did, if we were having an intervention, Becky would be the person. So do you think you drink so much because you really suck at life?
I'm definitely the one you want at an intervention. I'm really good at that. I have so much empathy for it. Oh, my God.
Well, welcome to Reverse Cyclopedia on the Road.
Oh, yeah. Guys, this is really exciting. This is like a it's like a fun Volume 2 thing.
Sure. We went into recording Volume 2 knowing full well that we were going to be on tour. You know, we're touring actors. Look at us. And so right now, as we're recording this, we are currently in Minneapolis, Minnesota, about to head out on a tour to North Dakota and Iowa.
Yeah. So when we are in North Dakota, I'm definitely going to listen to at least one episode to change our analytics.
We'll finally conquer the northern Midwest.
Just so it looks like North Dakota really likes us by less than 1%.
but compared to the population of North Dakota, that's like, whoa, 25% are listening to us.
I'm going to be like, later I'm going to be like, who was listening to us in Fargo? Weird.
Yo.
Oh, it was me.
Well, we're also announcing that, you know, there's going to be some fun stuff there. We're going to have some other guest spots coming down the pike.
Yeah.
Some local friends of ours who graciously agreed to help us out. So you're going to hear those episodes later on this month.
Yep.
And that being said, there's also going to be, you know, maybe the sound quality is not going to be up to snuff. There might be some weird background noise. We're doing this in a lot of hotel rooms and things like that. I'm telling you right now, quality control might take a dip, okay? We're not sure how echoey things are here. We might also...
We also just don't know where we're staying sometimes.
So things might be a day late. I'm telling you this all now so you can get off our back. So at our intervention, you're not rude to us later.
Yeah, so our three listeners out there who are mad that we're not dropping at 5 a.m. on a Monday are going to be like, where's my morning drive, guys?
I wholeheartedly believe there are some people just setting their clocks to reverse cyclopedia.
If you're one of those people, can you just let us know so we can feel good about ourselves?
Also, we have to remember later, I'm saying this out loud, because we're in central time now, so we have to keep that in mind of setting when the thing drops.
No, I'm not doing this mental gymnastics. I refuse to do that.
Someone do time math for us.
I don't want to play that game. I'm good. It breaks my brain every time. I don't get it. Why do we have time zones? It makes no sense to me. I will say, though, that what you just did is very much like the please don't judge me too harshly at this audition. I'm a little sick right now. We're just making excuses for our low quality for later. Please still hire us.
If you can't win them over by talent, maybe sympathy can help.
Maybe sympathy.
I'm not beneath that. I think that's the Price is Right strategy of betting $1,001. You know.
Yeah, totally. I think you know what though. I think it'll be fun. Like you know, right now we're in a pretty good spot. Right now. But I feel like, you know, we might be in a hotel where we'll be like, oh, did you hear that? And that was our neighbors. Yeah. Oh, did you hear that? That was a goose outside. Yeah. Like, I'm going to point it out.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Ramada by Wyndham.
Yeah.
Well, what did we talk about last week, Becky?
Oh, we talked about Gandhi.
Yes, of course. The
a Mahatma, if you will.
Completely simplistic topic that is Gandhi.
Yeah, it was really simple for us to talk about that. And it turned out to be a super hilarious episode. where, you know, because he was just a funny guy.
Make him laugh, make him laugh. That was actually written for Gandhi.
Yeah. Gandhi was like, haha, look at me, sewing my own clothes. Haha, I'm hilarious.
Well, what were some of the things that we got wrong and or right? How'd we do?
Well, we talked about this. Mm-hmm. And as we were researching on Gandhi, you know, quickly without reading a 600-page biography of him.
Absolutely. There's been no shortage of material based upon this man's life.
Oh, sure. But like I read like a history.com article. I wasn't about to pick up his entire biography.
Sure. We didn't have time to read the book.
I read very slowly. Yeah. What we got wrong is maybe we went to an maybe I went to an extreme on his sexual deviance.
Well,
I guess.
Well, kind of like some recent information
really
that had come to light.
Not really a sexual deviant, but
there are possible sexual abuse scandals. Is that fair to say?
So yeah. So basically, what it was was that Gandhi, in his 30s, decided that celibacy was the only way to like true enlightenment, if you will.
And this is after having children, having a wife.
Oh yeah, he was married at 13.
It was not like he was a lifelong celibate.
No, he was married at 13. He had three children. Wow. I think it was three children with her. And it was rumored that his father was on his deathbed. And while his father was on his deathbed, Gandhi was with his wife in the biblical sense. And so that's kind of what triggered his like, oh no, sex is bad mentality. But it was like years later that he even started doing the celibacy thing. So maybe he suppressed it for a long time and then it came up later, if that's even true.
Yeah.
That was like a passing thing in the article of like, this could be the reason.
And it was not necessarily like a religious kind of a doctrine. It was sort of like just an ethical kind of a thing, right?
I don't know. I couldn't really gather. No one really had a straight reason to why celibacy was so important to him all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. In order to test his willpower, mm-hmm. he absolutely used to have young women lie with him mm-hmm. In the nude. And he would, you know, and it was a test of his willpower, a test of his ability to say no, I guess. He did preach to husbands that they should fight their animal instincts. Mm-hmm. And he preached to wives that they should deny their husbands and deny sex for pleasure for themselves. And sex should only be used to procreate. And you should only do it like once or twice a year. Like it shouldn't be that you should deny yourself that pleasure. I don't know what the end game of that is, to be honest.
It sounds like things that, you know, you would hear from a very religious conservative base.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily who the man was. I mean, one point that we were kind of just wrong about, or at least in the weeds on, he was not, you know, a purely religious figure. You know, he was not a priest or anything like that.
He, no, was, he was a lawyer. By trade. Yeah. Yeah, and then later a politician that. Because of it. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, his background is at least in, you know, secular education and you know, just that, being a very well-educated man. He was, you know, educated in England, where he became a lawyer. So, yeah, like that kind of shift in life, it just seems to be this kind of extreme of secular ethics teachings, you know, yeah. credo on just how you should conduct yourself in life. There was something that we had both, you know, kind of seen where, you know, it's not completely far gone for practitioners of Hinduism to engage in celibacy to one degree or not, in a sense of proving their faith. But this doesn't necessarily seem to be exactly coinciding. We kind of came to the conclusion that there is sort of a personal extreme here. This doesn't seem to be the typical kind of teachings. And that, I think, is...
I mean, it still feels like an abuse of power.
It's deserving some scrutiny.
It definitely still feels like an abuse of power, especially when, as he got older, the women tend to get younger, right? Yeah. And, like, that was kind of the thing. And there's a record of him lying with his grandniece. Not by blood. It was his grandnephew's wife.
And not laying with in terms of sex, but literal just no, literally, sleeping in the same bed.
But like while nude.
Okay.
And so, and she was 18, which is like, sure, but he was 78, right? Or
very later in life, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's like, okay. And so all these women that he was lying with or whatever, they are looking to him as this saintly figure.
Mm-hmm.
They are, so to me, it is a complete abuse of his power to kind of like, sure, he's testing his humanity, if you will, and maybe their humanity, but like... He's using them as guinea pigs for his experiments, and that also feels gross.
Yeah, that's not necessarily how you should go about teaching or espousing any kind of belief.
Right.
He would also instruct
young boys and girls to lie naked together, but and like bathe together, but then would be punished if there was any kind of sexual talk going on.
Yeah.
So I mean, we know. I mean, this is a little bit of a tangent, but we know as human beings, as, you know, anthropologists, as sociologists, we know that, like, any kind of, like, celibate nation or whatever, that's a failed experiment. That does not work.
That's true. Yeah. For a myriad of reasons.
Yeah. Like, stopping yourself from having sex is not appropriate.
Yeah.
It's just not.
Right. The animals do it. And it's not to say, like, well, just because the animals eat their shit, we should. No, it's like it is a normal human function with proven health benefits to engage in regular sexual intercourse, to masturbation. All that is perfectly healthy and natural.
Sure. And the flip side of that is if you are denying yourself or you're putting, you know, sex in a position of being, you know, viewed as wrong, mm-hmm. right, then you are creating a mentality that is dangerous towards women.
Tesla, Nikola Tesla, celibate, weird fucking guy.
Weird fucking guy.
I believe Howard Hughes also falls into that category.
Weird fucking guy.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know what's going on in the Catholic Church these days, so hello. Weird fucking guys.
Weird, all of them. Weird fucking guys. WFGs.
So what we learned is that maybe we wasn't quite right in saying that he was grooming young women, although it does feel like it stays in that category. Mm-hmm. It's not documented in any way that there was rape, and it's not documented that it was not consensual. However, it comes into play of like, in your position of power, is anything really consensual? Is that, you know, there is that bit of that gray area there that like, whatever on that end.
Our extreme kind of attitude was based around this understanding that there would be some maliciousness, some malevolent intent in the way that he was acting towards young women, young people in general. So that, in that we were wrong about it because there's nothing, no concrete evidence.
He's not R. Kelly. I mean, that's like, that's what it comes down to, right? Like, fair. Like if we're going to scale
the Me Too scale. Yeah. Yeah. He's not Harvey Weinstein.
He's not Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
He's still Gandhi, right? And he is absolutely, I mean, he's controversial in India right now, which is something we didn't touch upon, but like he is very much viewed and was viewed in the moment even of his life as like this saintly, godlike figure.
Yeah, that was one of the questions that I had, and that, you know, was answered pretty quickly in that, you know, going back into the 1910s, 20s, he did have a deity-like reverence to him. He had this, you know, the status symbol that we equate to, you know, larger than life figures like a Martin Luther King, he had that throughout the majority of his life, which is startling.
Which is how he got an ashram of people to follow him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He was this figure, you know, through, it wasn't something like, and, you know, in 10 years on his death, we made this holiday kind of a thing, or he's now putting on money. I mean, that was kind of like immediate that effect. There is a holiday commemorating him.
His birthday is a national holiday in India. Yeah.
He is on money. That was like an immediate thing. The timeline I was roughly correct on, I kind of skewed, I guess, the extremes. He was born in the 1860s. And he was assassinated just after India got its independence from England. It was
1948, right?
Yeah, 1947 was when India got its independence. Oh, technically, for a few years, it was a crown dominion, kind of like how Australia and Canada are technically part of the British crown, but they're completely autonomous countries. India had that designation for a couple of years.
Okay.
But yeah,
take a little.
Yeah. Well, I thought Gandhi was, I had an image, he was a much younger man. I mean, I thought it was one of those things that he looked older because of the stress and strain that he was on in his life.
Because of the not eating.
Exactly. Well, yeah. He died at 78. I had no idea that he was that old. So that timeline was just a little skewed for me. And I was also incorrect about the person who assassinated him was not a follower. It was someone who, kind of an extremist.
Who's a Hindu nationalist.
Hindu nationalist, who was upset with Gandhi for being too lax and accommodating to Muslims in India.
Yeah.
So it is very much a, you know, a politically and, you know, religiously driven assassination.
Yeah, because we also didn't touch upon this before, but Gandhi was preaching that, you know, Hindus and Muslims should coexist in India.
Something maybe kind of big that we did omit, at least, is just the acknowledgement, the recognition that Gandhi is the father of nonviolent movements. Like, I knew that was part of a proponent of something that he espoused, you know, that made him such a figure, but I never kind of put together, like, oh, yeah, who comes before him in terms of a figure who led a revolution based around peace?
Yeah.
I can't come up with anyone.
No, yeah. And there's actually a document of Martin Luther King Jr. staying in Gandhi's room after, you know, after Gandhi had been assassinated, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But he had visited India and he was supposed to, you know, stay at a hotel or whatever, but he had visited Gandhi's room and said that he could feel his vibration, so he slept there with his wife that night.
Interesting.
And that was kind of when he was like, oh, okay, I'm gonna, you know, well, and Martin Luther King was a very religious man, but
sure.
That was when he was kind of like, okay, I'm gonna follow in his footsteps and do, like, you know, nonviolent civil disobedience.
I will say I do owe an apology to Ben Kingsley.
Yes, you do.
I did not know that he was of Indian background. He is an Indian English person. Ben Kingsley is his stage name. His birth name is Krishna. It's his first name. I'm going to butcher the last name. Pandit, I believe. So he's not just like, here's a white guy in brown face.
Yeah.
It's a lot more nuanced and unfair. So I do owe an apology to that. But
When Sir Ben Kingsley does listen to our podcast, he will feel
Sir better. Ben. I don't know if this apology even does it. I don't know. I'm not sure how much to apologize there.
Well, I do feel like, I mean, to your credit, I will say when the movie first came out, I do feel like there was some hubbub of like, it's brown face or whatever.
I feel like it gets kind of lumped into movies where it's like there's...
But it's one of those things.
It's a strange casting of representation.
Representation.
Accurate representation. But yeah, it's, you know, doesn't quite fall under category there.
Statistically common that it would, but you know,
yeah,
you know, so
it's easy to jump the gun on that.
This
one
is one where it didn't. Okay. Weird.
So I think that we did have a pretty good grasp and a sense of these things. Our biggest, you know, knock against ourselves is kind of the extreme level that we took it to. You know, I would hope that we handled this topic with grace. You know, I hope that we were sensitive enough to things, and above all that we were just being earnest in our curiosity and understanding of things.
Sure. I mean, I'm still kind of like, he was doing some weird shit. I don't know.
Yeah, sure. But I would hope that just that, like, it's not out of turn, some of the things that we were saying, and that we are at least, you know, backing up our
ideas. It's all, everything that we were saying, I mean, again, he's not R. Kelly, but, like, right, everything that we were saying, it is backed up with articles.
All right. So we, after all told, are going to score ourselves a 7 out of 10.
What is that one?
Not completely dumb.
Oh, not completely dumb.
We know some things.
That's fun for us.
Surely not all of the things.
No, we left out some stuff.
Lots of room to grow.
Yeah, always. Always. And today's letter is
B.
And that means we're talking about Brussels sprouts. Oh, goody.
If there was a comic book, no, not comic book drama doesn't even like land on this. If there was like a mythological epic and you had like some sort of monster at the end that you had to slay, I think it would be Brussels sprouts. Is that fair to say?
Oh, for me?
Yeah.
You're saying?
Yes.
You're saying if I had a comic book, well, I mean, maybe.
If you,
I don't
if
know.
If you had an antithesis to your being.
I don't know if that would be, maybe that would be like the underboss. Like, I don't think it would be the boss.
Oh, so Brussels sprouts are like the right-hand man of what?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of like what's worse than Brussels sprouts. Well, okay, so here's
the patriarchy.
There you go. Yeah, of course. Duh. The Brussels sprouts, that's just it. The fucking Brussels sprouts are the goddamn underboss of the fucking patriarchy. That's, I'm just saying it here and now. Fact check me all you want. It's the truth. Well, because here's the thing. You can defeat Brussels sprouts pretty easily by fucking coating them in bacon grease.
Or cheese or something.
Yes, absolutely. Like, you don't want to taste Brussels sprouts, but you still, for some reason, want to eat fucking Brussels sprouts. Have you tried bacon fat? Because, like, okay, so for those of you who don't know, which Jed obviously knows this.
I've heard this story many times.
But for those of you who don't know, I do not eat Brussels sprouts in my adult days because when I was younger, my mother used to make Brussels sprouts all the time. Like, that was like the go-to veggie. I don't know if they were just fucking cheap or what, but that was like the go-to veggie. She probably liked them, but she wouldn't cook them well.
she just boiled them?
She boiled them, which is so gross. I love my mother. Rest her soul. Fuck you.
We as a society, I think, collectively like learned that there were better ways to cook things than boiling. Like, after the Korean War.
Yeah, apparently not. My mother was just stuck she fucking liked them that way or something. I don't know. You can tell I'm heated because I'm swearing a lot about this.
Yeah. This is the Becky topic in case that there's any mystery.
Yeah, this is the Becky topic. So my mother used to boil Brussels sprouts, which was, for anybody who's done that, they get mushy and they're just like, they're already a bitter, it's cabbage. They're little cabbages.
I've heard that line from The Simpsons also, that Marge Simpson said that. I'm not sure if it was in an episode. It was definitely one of the video games. Marge Simpson says to Bart, Bart's like, ugh, Brussels sprouts. And Marge goes, think of them as little cabbages.
I mean, they essentially are, but they're like 10 times more bitter.
They're just bitter. Texture-wise, is it like that kind of earthy crunch sort of a thing?
Well, yes. And I'll tell you why I know that. So they're just more bitter. And I know there are people out there who really like them or whatever. But especially like there's like a good 20% of them are like the stem, and the stem is much more bitter. Like, it's gross. So my mom used to boil them, and it was, you know, as a child of the 90s, it was eat your vegetables, eat your vegetables, eat your vegetables. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. I love vegetables. Mm-hmm. I will eat any vegetable that you put in front of me. Obviously, sans, you know, Brussels sprouts. So I would say to my mother all the time, I'd be like, just could you make fucking broccoli? Like, could you, like, I would be the kid asking for broccoli, asking for asparagus, asking for peppers, like something other than Brussels sprouts. And it was always just like, nope, we're having Brussels sprouts.
Like, it is, it's kind of a quintessential, like, Americana, you know, white America kind of like a thing. If there was like a stock photo of like, you know, middle class family having dinner, Brussels sprouts next to mashed potatoes or on the side kind of a thing.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's for whatever reason kind of holds a prominence in
I would even be like, peas, mom, I'll have peas. I don't like, and I don't love peas, but like, I'll have peas. No, it was always Brussels sprouts. So I made a deal with my mother. I can remember standing in the kitchen in the house we lived in Barrington, New Hampshire. I was standing there and I said, I don't know what came over me, but I was just like, Mom, I'll make a deal with you. If I can eat 2 raw Brussels sprouts, then I never have to eat another Brussels sprout in my life. And she was like, taken, you're never going to do that. They're gross raw. I know they're, like, she's like, I know they're gross raw. You know they're gross raw. Like, you're not going to do that. Holy shit, I've never been more determined in my entire life to do something. And so I ate those fucking Brussels sprouts leaf by leaf, choked that shit down like a goddamn champion.
See, that is such an origin story for a mythological hero. It's like,
It's the only thing I've ever been determined about my entire life.
Beckius Fleckius devoured the two raw Brussels sprouts, and then fast forwards. Then she was coming home from the war in Troy.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's where your journey takes off.
it became my Popeye moment. Now, no, it's yeah, absolutely. And so I ate them both, and my mom was like, well, holy shit, all right, deal's a deal. You never have to eat another Brussels sprout in your life. And I have not eaten a fucking Brussels sprout since that moment.
Ever.
Ever.
Wow.
That's deal's a deal.
Yeah.
Deal is a deal. You don't get to renege on that deal.
Yeah, even in death, that pact is whole.
Yeah. Again, my mother is gone at this point, but like, and no. She knows. She's still there. She knows.
Yeah, well, to co-sign onto kind of your thoughts and feelings about that, obviously, I'm a very picky eater. I believe we've covered this.
We had a whole episode about picky eaters.
In my house, even, you know, my parents were vegetables were prolific. You know, they were always pushing vegetables and things like that. And even Brussels sprouts, I can maybe remember once or twice that they were there. And I think even my parents, my mom, you know, at one point was just like, oh, no, I don't like Brussels sprouts. Kind of thing. Like, even for grown adults who are just like, yeah, we eat vegetables regularly. Like, that is a cutoff even.
Yeah. They're very bitter. So my stepdad, after my mother had passed away, I was, you know, helping my stepdad get the house in order and stuff. And he made Brussels sprouts, like, one of the nights that I was in Texas with him or whatever.
Poor timing, man.
And I was like, how fucking dare you right now? How dare you? How dare you do this? And I will say, I think I did take a couple bites because I felt obligated at that point. So I might have lied and said that, you know, I have tried Brussels sprouts, whatever. But he, like, cooked them in bacon.
Those are bereavement sprouts. They don't count.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. He, like, cooked them in bacon fat and, like, lots of butter or whatever. And it was, like, with, like, you know, also with bacon bits in it. And he's like, just try it. It's good this way, whatever. And I was like, okay, so it's instantly not healthy anymore. I want you to know this. Yeah. Like, this is, like, not, like, what's the fucking point at this point?
Is there a negating effect to vegetables? I've always wondered that, like, how does that kind of nutrition science work, where are you?
Put it on the list.
Yeah, fair enough. are you, like, killing whatever health benefits there are just because there's, like, a negative, you know,
I'm sure you're still getting the vitamins that you would get, right? You'd still get whatever vitamins you're going to get from Brussels sprouts, which, like, supposedly they're really healthy for you or whatever.
That's my next question.
I don't know. It's also a thing people tell you when you don't want to eat Brussels sprouts. It's really healthy for you. Yeah, fuck off. So is broccoli. Give me that shit.
Sure.
It's like, are the vitamins more important than, like, the nitrates you're going to get from the bacon and the, you know, the fat and the cholesterol clogging, like the artery clogging fat that you get from bacon.
His cholesterol's through the roof. I mean, he's had a triple bypass, but his vitamin counts are incredible.
Amazing. He must eat a lot of Brussels sprouts and bacon.
We have, you know, a few friends who have talked about, like, oh yeah, I love Brussels sprouts, and it's because they do some shit like that to them and everything. Yeah. But we know plenty of people who are just like, yeah, I'll eat them. Can't get enough of them because I do. You know, it's one of those, like, oh, life hack. Got them. How do you make Brussels sprouts delicious?
Yeah, which, like, there are so many other vegetables out there. I can't imagine
probably
that there's
have to,
like,
work less hard.
One vitamin that you're gonna get from Brussels sprouts that you, like, don't get from kale. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Or, like, from arugula. Like, you could, come on. Like,
Brussels sprouts make you...
Or cabbage. Fucking cabbage. Just have goddamn cabbage.
I was going to say, they make you bulletproof.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, they have that vitamin.
Oh, that's such a good vitamin. That bulletproof vitamin. It's my favorite vitamin.
That's one of the B vitamins. They don't tell you. That's the name.
B for bulletproof.
Bulletproof, yeah.
Yeah. What does this vitamin do? Well, it's bulletproof.
I would love to know, are Brussels sprouts, in fact, that healthy? That was the, you know... The thing that was touted, that's the tagline that was growing up in the, you know, 80s and 90s, that
it was
the,
like,
line.
I think it was considered a superfood.
Right. Does it fall into the category of superfoods? If you could, like, rank healthy vegetables, like, you know, give, like, a power index chart, or if it's like a basketball tournament, you know, with, like, a number seeding, where does Brussels sprouts rank? How high up on the health seed scale do they rank?
That's a great question. And then, like, as decades you know, go on? Do they drop down? Do they, you know?
Ooh, like an all-time ranking.
Yeah.
You know, is this like
in the early aughts, like, you know, with Michelle Obama, it was kale, right? Mm. Like, and it still is. Like, kale is like,
sure.
You know.
Is this like an undefeated, you know, University of Kentucky kind of a team here? You know,
yeah.
Where does that rank? Is it in the power conference of vegetables?
Can we rank? Yeah. Can we do a power conference of vegetables? This actually sounds really fun.
I really want to do this. Absolutely. Yeah. We should make a tournament.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we'll do a vegetable tournament while we're on the road.
Just make it fun and exciting for us.
Something has to.
Oh, God.
Well, one of the big things that I think helped to get this topic into the jar here is, why was Brussels sprouts the kind of catch-all sort of thing of like, kids, you have to eat your Brussels sprouts before you do whatever. Like, it was in commercials, it was in sitcoms.
Yeah.
It had this weird kind of cliche effect of like, oh, kids hate Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
How did that arise? Was there like a big push? I'm imagining, you know,
big,
how...
Big Brussels sprout, man.
Big Brussels
sprout.
Was it big fucking Brussels sprout?
Yeah, it was one farm out in bumfuck Iowa. Ooh, we'll go find it. where they just grew Brussels sprouts and they were like, oh no, our sales are tanking.
Yeah.
So you know what it is? It's an episode of Parks and Rec where the Swiss chard, they get a charred body.
Oh my God.
Because Brussels sprouts are disgusting. And we all know that. Anybody who says otherwise is a fucking liar. And I'm just kidding. But honestly, they're really bitter and gross. It's like Swiss chard. Swiss chard is also very bitter and gross.
The image that I'm conjuring is like, you know, in the 1950s. When like doctors would be in commercials and be like, these cigarettes are good for you. Was there just like, did some, you know, big Brussels sprout, you know, the lobby need to find some doctors who'd be like, just tell fucking America to eat Brussels sprouts right now. Tell them it's good.
That'll fight their obesity.
Yeah, here's $500,000, okay?
Oh my God.
There's a
Brussels sprout lobbyist out there.
Here's a Corvette. Just tell the kids, put them in the shows, tell all the script writers in Hollywood, tell them to eat their fucking Brussels sprouts, okay? Make it a thing. And, like, that was supposed to catch on.
Yeah. Yeah, that was
it. For what reason? Know? Why? Where did that come from? How did we...
Doctors were like, let me just hook up the cocaine to the IV over here. Oh, and then the same breath, I'll tell you the Brussels sprouts are good for you. Jesus Christ.
Do Gen Zers grow up with this concept of Brussels sprouts, do you think?
I don't know. I've actually... we might need to ask... Well... Middle schoolers wouldn't be Gen Zers, would they?
I think they might be.
Yeah. I might need to start asking what vegetables they dislike on the tour.
We're just going to poll the auditorium.
Yeah. I'm just going to be like, yo, you like Brussels sprouts?
Yeah. We're doing,
how do you feel about Brussels sprouts?
We're doing educational children's tours with middle school students.
Our shows have nothing to do with nutrition.
No, but we're going to poll the room.
But
we're going to
be like, yo, before we start, raise your hand if you like Brussels sprouts.
Interrupt. Brussels sprouts. Do you know what they are first?
Yeah. Raise your hand if you know what a Brussels sprout is.
I kind of think that
we're in farm country, so they might.
Sure.
You know, well, I feel like they should know.
I think the trope has kind of died out. I think it sort of belongs to millennials.
You think so?
I think so.
Oh, so it's just another bad thing on our list?
Yeah.
Everything bad happens to millennials, I swear to Christ.
The alpha and omega being Brussels sprouts.
started with Brussels sprouts, ends with Brussels sprouts. Grossest fucking vegetable out there.
College debt, environmental destruction, devastation.
We lived through 9/11, a pandemic.
Second fiddle, all of it to Brussels
Y2K.
Sprouts.
Y2K.
Yeah.
Y2K got nothing on Brussels sprouts.
Oh my God, do you just want to go up to teenagers and be like, hey kids, can we tell you about Y2K?
Oh yeah.
And how much bottled water our parents saved up that fall?
Can we tell you about the night that we all stayed up and watched the computer... time calendar turn because we didn't know if the computers were just going to explode or not.
Here's a fun anecdote I can vividly remember about that day.
Oh my God,
okay. You know, so it was, we're on winter break or whatever. I don't remember what day it fell on, but I was off from school. So I got up in the morning at a leisurely time and, you know, I had breakfast in the kitchen and my mom was watching the news or whatever. And I think they were like talking about Y2K or my mom might have initiated and she was like, yeah, you know, it's already New Year's in Australia. So most likely if Y2K was a thing, we're going to be fine. Like she had to reference that like assuage of the family's fears.
Let me explain to you how time zones work. It's fine. That's hilarious. Everyone was like so concerned that Wall Street was going to shut down. And
oh, no, don't.
Yeah, I like the way we went from Brussels sprouts to Y2K. Yeah. They feel like they're in the same category.
This is us just doing a little bit of childhood therapy.
Yeah. Dealing with the...
venting past trauma.
Both nostalgic and traumatic. It's weird.
Beautiful in its own way.
Yeah. Brussels sprouts are gross. That's what I'm going to end on that.
Yeah, somehow this vegetable has become... It's the villain of the vegetable world. And there's got to be some sort of backstory about why.
Which is funny because, like, I feel like... Okay, so I do feel like in our lifetime, right, as children, right, broccoli was kind of the villain, right? Broccoli was like the one that everyone was like, oh, I hate broccoli. And like that felt like the go-to vegetable that people were like, yeah, everyone hates broccoli.
I never had that relationship with it.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like in every like cartoon and every like trope of like kids not eating their vegetable, it was always broccoli on the table that they wouldn't eat. And like did Big Brussels Sprout do this to broccoli? Because broccoli doesn't deserve that. Broccoli doesn't deserve that.
Becky, you may have. You should have quit what you couldn't leave well enough alone, could you, Becky?
I love how every topic we talk about, it's a conspiracy.
There's some deep state work at play here. We're just the only people who are talking about it. Yeah.
This is why our podcast is number one.
No, that's why they're keeping it low. They're working to get their...
Oh, right.
There are agents out there affecting our algorithm.
Right, Big Brussels sprouts. I knew it. I knew they were coming for me. Ad break. This is where we'd put in an ad, but we don't have those yet. So here's a fake ad. Do you have a lot of bags and you don't know where to put them? I suggest you get a bag bag. The bag bag is where you can put bags and lots of bags, but no things, only bags. Store it under your sink.
Well, Becky, what did we talk about today?
Well, Jed, we talked about Brussels sprouts.
Ah, yes, the magical weed that is Brussels sprouts.
The mini cabbage. My cabbages.
How did that joke not make it into this one earlier?
Well, it's here now.
Would that joke be anything if it were my Brussels sprouts? Something about cabbage is just an inherently funny word.
Yeah, Brussels sprouts is too wordy for that.
Yeah, easily.
But yeah, we talked about Brussels sprouts and whether or not, just how nutritious are they?
Yeah, the question of are they superfoods came up. I think the biggest thing is just like tying into... How did Brussels sprouts become such like a catchphrase / cliche of like sitcoms and commercials? It was just this catch-all thing of like, kids don't like or kids won't do blank being eating Brussels sprouts.
In your life.
Yeah, in our lifetimes, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, again, for me, broccoli was more of like the villain vegetable.
Oh, okay, so there's some other vegetables to consider.
Yeah, maybe it was a regional thing.
Ooh, didn't raise that question.
We didn't
here.
But I just did.
Yeah, just Brussels sprouts, how good are they for you? Where do they come about? Who's doing all this propagandizing?
Who's propagandizing the Brussels sprouts?
Who the hell is in Big Brussels Sprout? God, the more I peel these leaves, the more bitter it gets.
How deep do the pockets go? It goes all the way to the top!
I seriously want to look into this this vegetable tournament kind of a thing.
Oh, yeah. We're going to start a vegetable tournament.
We need to make that happen.
All right. Well, Jed, what'd you learn?
Nothing.
Oh, good.
Becky, what'd you learn today?
Well, I learned nothing.
Well, that's fantastic. Then we're right on track with all the things we're not supposed to be learning.
Right on track for where we want to be. Amazing.
Well, join us next time for more Reverse Cyclopedia on the road.
Bye, everyone.
With Curious Becky and Curious Jed, talking about the stuff that's not in their head. You could watch another podcast and learn stuff instead, but it's Reverse Cyclopedia.
Reverse. Versyclopedia is produced and edited by Jed Krivisky and Becky Fleckner and is part of Artisan Place Media. The theme song is written and performed by Sam Kwetniak. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Reverse Cyclopedia.